Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, the last five, the most recent ones, are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to talk about positive thinking and how it can affect coming to a successful outcome. Yes, and how we can encourage it. So first thing I think we're going to ask is, what is positive thinking? And I see that we have lots of participants. Thank you all for being here. And let's see. Shirashi says, and a lot of people agree with this, that positive thinking is the same as being optimistic. Mm-hmm. Being optimistic. Thinking that things are going to go well and working towards that. Positive thinking. Mm-hmm. Being optimistic. I think that's fair. And we're getting a lot of agreement. Thank you for your participation. Being optimistic. Mm-hmm. And Jeffrey says that positive thinking is finding the good in any situation. Finding the good in any situation. And also people are adding finding the good in everyone, in our participants, and assuming that they are people of good character and are acting in a sincere manner and not kind of assuming that they're not. Mm-hmm. Finding the good in any situation. And also quite a few people are agreeing that positive thinking is finding the good in our participants, in everyone, and thinking the best of people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is an interesting point. Quite a few people are saying that it's thinking the best of people until proven otherwise. Well, yes. And if people are not acting in good faith, and we have discussed this on prior shows, sometimes that happens. Of course, we need to be certain that we're not just being negative, but that's when we can take some positive action to find out why and to prevent it from keeping us from reaching a successful outcome. Yes. Mm-hmm. So finding the good in any situation, the good in everyone. Mm-hmm. To prove otherwise, yes. Anne says that positive thinking is having a preconceived notion of success. What a wonderful idea. Having a preconceived notion of success. And we have talked in prior shows about preconceived notions, and we kind of talked about them perhaps in a more negative manner, because sometimes a preconceived notion prevents us from positive thinking. But, of course, we can have a preconceived notion that's positive, can't we? That we are going to succeed, that we are going to find a way, that we're going to get a solution, and we're going to have a successful outcome. A preconceived notion of success. What a good way to start out. Mm-hmm. You and others are usually using a visualization comment, visualizing a positive outcome. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about visualization and how it's a way to think about what's going to happen in the future, but not tie ourselves to the specifics, but think about, well, if we do this, this should be the reasonable outcome. And if we do this, this should be the outcome, to visualize a positive outcome. To visualize success, to visualize that we're going to be successful and reach our goals. Yes. Mm-hmm. So those are wonderful definitions of positive thinking. So how do we, now that we know what it is, and I think we can agree that it's a very good thing and will lead us towards a successful conclusion, how do we encourage this positive thinking? How do we make sure it happens? How do we encourage it? Mm-hmm. Here's a very good point. Kristen says this, that you encourage positive thinking by being passionate about the issues and certain of the desired outcome. Well, certainly you can encourage positive thinking by being passionate about the issues and certain of the desired outcome. Well, yeah, it's a good point, and we're getting some agreement and some question about being certain, but we can certainly visualize and be passionate about what we deem to be the successful outcome. Now, sometimes as we get further along in the process, and we have discussed this at other shows, by the way, last five shows archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. And we've talked about the fact that oftentimes we have a certain outcome that we've got in our mind as a preconceived notion or as a visualization. And sometimes it needs to be modified a smidge, but you can certainly be passionate about the issues and certain of the desired outcome. Yeah, that desired outcome you can certainly be certain about. Mm-hmm. Good point. Colin says that you encourage positive thinking by leading with conviction. I'm certain that I know where I'm going. Come, follow me. Yeah, I can lead you. I can show you the way. I can, yeah, people, this is this may be an American expression, but, and I know that this is a global show, but you ever hear the expression herding cats, H-E-R-D, herding like a shepherd, herding cats? And the idea is that if you can herd cats, you can lead people, because cats are hard to make to go in a certain direction as a group. So, yes, leading with conviction. Mm-hmm. Showing that you are in control of at least your own abilities, and that people should follow your example. Leading with conviction is will encourage positive thinking. We've got a good leader. Mm-hmm. We know what we're doing. We can go forward. I'm positive of it. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Good idea. Mm-hmm. You know, Mathesa and others are saying that when you lead with conviction, you need to show why you are positive about success. Mm-hmm. And there's some talk about having it, thank you for all of your participation, about researching it ahead of time and then showing the participants the research and what's been done before and why this is the right path now, that you can lead with conviction because you know what you're doing, that you're an expert in the field, in the topic. Uh-huh. Gustav has an interesting point that you use case studies. That's prior cases, prior times when the same issues have come up and have been successfully handled, or maybe, and you know I say this occasionally and it's really true, failures, especially not ours, hopefully, but even ours, but failures are oftentimes more interesting than successes because you know not what not to do and how to give a solution that's different, how to answer in a different way. Yeah, that's really important. Sometimes it's more interesting to find out what didn't work. Well, it's always interesting to find out what did, but what didn't work is very interesting so that we can know where to start from and not repeat something that, well, had a really good run, a really good try, and didn't quite work out. Yeah. So using case studies, both negative and positive ones. Yeah. just to show what's been done. Mm-hmm. Darlene says that we can encourage positive thinking by being encouraging to the other participants. Yeah, being passionate, being encouraging, saying when they do something right, and saying that, and even if you don't necessarily agree, it's an opinion, it's something that they thought, to take it seriously and to think about it and be encouraging. Because, you know, sometimes, and that happens on this show all the time, I think that the show is going to go a certain way. Mm-hmm. And I have an idea of what is going to be talked about, what's going to be said. And a lot of times, and I tell you this quite freely, I'm surprised we go in a different direction than I thought we would. But that's good, because it means that we're all thinking and we're all open to other people's ideas. Being encouraging to the other participants. Right. You want to hear from them. You want to know what they're thinking. They bring their own expertise to the table. They bring their own ideas. They bring their own knowledge. Yeah, all very good, all very interesting. Need to encourage it. Mm-hmm. You know, Edward and others are saying that along that lines, you need to express gratitude for participation. Yeah, you need to say thank you. Somebody has worked extra hard, or somebody's really used their expertise, especially if it's expertise that they would ordinarily charge for. And they're doing it because they believe in the issues. We need to thank them. They've put in extra. They've given their time and effort and expertise to the group. Always thank people for their participation. You know, at the end of these shows, I always thank you for being here, right? It's important. Who will I talk to? Yeah, so it's important. It's important to show gratitude and to thank people. After all, they are giving their valuable time, mm-hmm. and their valuable effort. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, this is an interesting point that quite a few people are saying. I'm going to say, Lonnie and others, I'm going to say that it's using body language to indicate a positive attitude. Right? People are saying that in order to encourage a positive thinking and a positive attitude, you should smile. Yeah, you should be pleasant. You should lean forward when you're talking to people. Show interest in them. Look at them. Yeah. Show interest. Lean forward. Connect. Sometimes, well, you know, it depends on the group and depends on your relationship. You might even, like, pat someone's hand or something. You know what I mean? You show body language. Like affirmative hand. You know, welcoming and facial expression, and like nodding your head up and down, head motions. Yeah, people are saying head motions, and like affirmative motions, which would be positive body language, right? Yeah, and body language is important. If you're leaning there looking kind of sour with your hands folded across your chest, then not it. Yeah, you want to have a positive attitude. Mm-hmm. Positive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and in addition to affirmative positive attitude, positive body language, you also want to use, a lot of people are mentioning, affirmative verbal language. Mm-hmm. Stephen and others are saying that you need to promote positive thinking by your words, by saying things in an affirmative manner. Mm-hmm. For example, yeah, people asking for examples. Instead of saying we could or we might, you could say we will. We will do this. We will research it. We will find out what needs to be done. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about let's do it instead of do you think we can? You see, those are positive words. We will. We can. Let's do it. Yeah, these are all positive verbal cues, as they're called, that we're making it. We're getting along. We're getting there. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is a real good point too. we've talked about this before, but it's very important that when you, sometimes the process is long, right? And it's taking quite a while. And you go, oh, gee, this is taking forever, and we're not getting anywhere. And that's discouraging, right? And so you need positive thinking, and you need to show yourself, but also the participants, the group, that you are getting somewhere. Because people forget where they started. You know, they forget that they didn't have this, you know, how far away they were. And they forget to see where they started and where they've, how far they've come. So it's important to celebrate the victories as you go. It's important to comment about them. It's important to keep track. It's important to show, look how far we've come. Look what we've done. Look what we've accomplished. And now we can keep going forward. Very important to keep, I don't mean celebrating in the sense of lighting a candle on a cake, although you could. I mean, we're going to have some food, and we're going to have some networking. We could have a celebration. We could have a toast, for example, you know, to clink glasses and like that. But it's important to, yes, people are saying a timeline to show progress. If that would be a good thing, yes. But however it is, a visual representation of progress is nice, yeah? You know how charities and things, when they're raising money and they have one of those, like a thermometer, and they fill in, pardon me, how much we've raised, the percentage and like that, and they fill it in just with a ink pen, just with a magic, with a felt tip marker. And they fill in that we've gotten this far, and then it goes a little further up, we've gotten this far, and they fill in the percentage and like that. Well, you know, it seems kind of basic, but it's very encouraging to see that you're getting somewhere, right? And not just we keep plodding away and nothing's happening, nothing's going forward, because it is. It's just sometimes it's hard to see. So, yeah, a visual representation, a little celebration, even a comment about how that we've got this done. Yes, good for us. We're going to go on to the next. Yeah, I actually like the visual representation thing because it's encouraging in the room. You know what I mean? If you, like, tack it up on the wall or something and you can see how far you've come. That's why fundraisers do that with the graph that shows how much. Mm-hmm, yeah, that's good. Teresa and others are saying that sometimes you need to view obstacles as challenges. Yeah. Because, you know, in everything we're going to run into a few problems, right? We're going to have something that doesn't go right. Sometimes the obstacles are outside. They're beyond our control. Something happens in the big old outside world, and we need to modify or change. Mm-hmm. And the key to positive thinking is indeed to view obstacles as positive challenges. Mm-hmm. And to make the group view the obstacles as positive challenges too, right? Yeah. People are using expressions for it. And I don't, is this Nietzsche? What doesn't kill us makes us stronger. Ever hear that expression? Well, nothing's going to kill us, of course. But it's the idea that we meet the challenge and we overcome it. And wow, that's really a success, right? That's something to celebrate. We've had a success. There was a challenge, an obstacle, as Teresa would call it, and we have met it in a positive way. We've overcome it. Mm-hmm. We can handle that. We've overcome it as a group, even better. Mm-hmm. We have viewed the obstacles as positive challenges. Mm-hmm. I've gotten quite a few people that are quoting Abraham Lincoln. And I gather he said, if you look for what's wrong, you will surely find it. Good man. If you look for what's wrong, you will surely find it. Yeah. So what we're going to look for is what's right and what, how to cure what is wrong. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we've encountered some obstacles, right? They're not usually of our making, but it might even be, well, we might have made an error in judgment, for example. So how do we maintain positive thinking even if we've encountered a problem, even if we've encountered some obstacles? Maria says to remember our strengths and look for solutions. Remember our strengths and look for solutions. You know, within any group, there are lots of different strengths, of course, lots of different skill levels, lots of different experience levels, and people who can really know what to do, know how to handle something. Yeah. Remember our strengths and look for solutions. Look together. Tit says you look to the group to recommend workable solutions. We've hit a snag. We have something that needs a solution. Let's work on it as a group. Let's think on it as individuals, of course. Bring our expertise to the table. Work on it as a group and look to the group to recommend workable solutions. Workable is, of course, the key word because it needs to be practical. We need to be able to do it. You know, Isabel and others are saying that the real trick is, and really experience tells us this somewhat, but also sometimes it becomes clear, that you need to know when to modify your goals or change your course of action. And we've talked about that. Sometimes we have a real definite goal in mind, a real definite outcome, and it's kind of detailed. But when we get into the process, when we start to deal with the group, when we start to really get down to the mechanics of it, the actual way something works, sometimes we do have to modify. And that's not an obstacle. That's just life. Sometimes you have to modify or change course. Well, now, quite a few people, Damien and others, are saying you should also know when to give up. When you should call it quits. When there's a consensus of participants, you know what? I'm going to say, I guess it's because I never give up, is what it really is. And I don't think that modifying or changing course is giving up, right? We're not stopping. We're just looking for a workable solution so that we can indeed have a successful outcome. Know when to give up. Well, I'm going to say know when to modify. Know when to change direction. Because if we give up, then we'll never get to a good solution, right? Giving up's not a solution. It's just kind of going, I can't find a solution. No, let's think about the pragmatics of it. Let's have positive thinking. Yeah. Let's be optimistic and say that we can still go forward just in a slightly different manner than we thought. Yeah. And we might even revise what a successful outcome looks like with the details. Sometimes you've got a real, real specific outcome in mind. That generally doesn't work. You've got to be kind of more loose about it so that if things on a practical level have to change a little, you can be flexible. Yeah. Owen says you need to get the habit of positive thinking instead of the habit of negative thinking. The habit of positive thinking. You know, that's of course, a useful idea always with all of our dealings in life, right? Not just in our participation in the workshop, the seminar, the mediation, whatever it is we're doing or leading. The habit of positive the habit of positive thinking instead of the habit of negative thinking. Get in the habit of it. This is how I am. I'm an optimistic person. Yeah, I think that's true. And, of course, that follows through to everything, to all aspects of your life. Optimism. Mm-hmm. Jennifer says that optimism is contagious. And even if the original idea is impractical, you can always find a way to make a difference. Optimism, which is positive thinking, is contagious. And even if the original idea is impractical, you can always find a way to make a difference. What a good idea. What a way of positive thinking. Well, we have something that needs to be worked out. What we thought was impractical, oftentimes something's impractical because of economics, right? Yeah, people are sending me examples of, it was a really good idea, but when you got into it, it was going to cost just a ton of money. Or we couldn't really raise that much funds. Or for some reason, we couldn't get the permits. You know what I mean? Sometimes there's an outside, real definite, practical reason why you have to modify your plans, but you can still make a difference. Yeah, that's the ultimate positive thinking, right? Optimism is contagious, and even if the original idea is impractical, you can always find a way to make a difference. Yes, perhaps you're going to become advisory to someone who can raise the money. That's a different, that is combining a goal, combining for a successful outcome, right? You know, I've done that. Sometimes the group, the organization, whatever, needs to get together with a different group or organization that they really didn't think about or thought they might be in competition with or something. Because if we don't get together, we won't get whatever it is done. We need to raise the funds, we need to do whatever, but we need to work together so that we can have a practical outcome. Mm-hmm. That's positive thinking too, right? We can all get along. So, and that is one of the reasons, and I know that I've said this before, one of the reasons that Recipe for Peace Now advocates really getting to know the other people in the group, and I know it's an overused word, but really networking, over food, really. It's not because, I always say the food is not a, and not because we're hungry. I mean, it might be dinner, but not really. The purpose of the food is a tool to get us thinking outside the box, to get us positive thinking towards each other and towards finding a workable solution. Because sometimes it's not all that obvious. We thought it was when it started, but, well, as we got into it, we found out, well, gee, that's not as obvious as I thought. That maybe it was a little too simple. Sometimes it's a little too complicated. Yeah. But you need to be able to get together with the other participants. And if you need to join with another group, you need to be able to do that too. Mm-hmm. And so, usually, Recipe for Peace Now advocates, you know, there are no rules, that we have some food in the room to keep everybody in the room to make a convivial time out if things are getting a little bit heated or too dragged out. You know, sometimes that too. We can call a time out and have something lovely to eat and to drink. And we will naturally get to know each other better. And we'll naturally think of better solutions outside of when we're sitting real formally together. We'll be able to think better outside the box. Mm-hmm. And yes, we've come to the time in the show where we talk about food. Yes, we talk about what we're going to bring. And I'm going to say the same thing, and thank you for all of your participation. I'm going to say the same thing that I always say, right? Right. I'm going to say that it's a terribly important, if you're going to have people bring food or have food in the room, that you communicate with everyone as to whether there are any allergies, any proof allergies to food, food prohibitions, or religious prohibitions to some sort of food. You don't want someone to have a bad time. And we need to tell everyone if this occurs so that they won't bring something wrong. Also, everyone needs to know ahead of time that they need to label with the food that they bring. Not what's it called, meatloaf, but what is in it, so that I can judge, so the eater can judge, pardon me, so that I can judge whether or not this is something that I can eat. I need to know what's in it. And I know this is because I think that I hate a party where you run out of food. I think that as leaders, we should have some extra food on hand. And we should have at least one safe recipe. Now, what on earth is a safe recipe? Well, it doesn't have too many ingredients. And the ingredients are first of all, not something that we've taken the survey right, not something that anybody has a food allergy to, a food prohibition, or a religious prohibition to any of the ingredients. So that's the first thing to know. The second thing to know is for a safe recipe, it should have not too terribly many ingredients, and they should be ingredients that the people in your area, and this is an international show, so the people in my group might be familiar with food different than the people in your group, but it should be food ingredients that people are familiar with and would have eaten before. So that they know they can eat it. It won't be a nasty surprise. So, our safe recipe this time is going to be a corn souffle. Mm-hmm. And it's a souffle because we are folding in egg whites. It's very delicious and very popular. My one caveat is that it needs to kind of sit on a wire rack when it comes out of the oven for about 10 minutes. Because it, unlike some souffles, it doesn't exactly sink. It's kind of light, more like a custard, more like a corn custard, but it needs to kind of settle when it comes out of the oven or else it will not cut nicely and it will go squishy. So here it is. Now, if you want to use fresh and make your own creamed corn and like that, yours will be a lot better than mine. It will be. But I'm going to go for the time practicality, don't have so much time to do it. And also in my area, in the United States, it is very easy to get canned and frozen vegetables. It really is. It's cheap and it's easy. So I'm going to use it. If you want to use fresh, you, of course, need to cook it a little longer. And if you want to make creamed corn, you, of course, will look up your favorite creamed corn recipe, and it will be fantabulous and probably better than mine. But we're going to use a can, yeah, just because it's so simple, it's so non-time-consuming, and it's so cheap and readily available, at least in this area. So we're going to preheat the oven to 350. Let's grease a nice big rectangular baking dish, like a 13 by 9. Yeah, you want to make it a little thicker, not too much thicker though, because it needs to spread out because it doesn't exactly rise. So we're going to have about a 16 ounce about 15 ounce can of cream style corn. Yes, it just comes like that in the can. It just, there it is. And then we're going to have one regular size can of that. And then we're going to have 3 cups of fresh corn. You want to know the truth, I'm going to use frozen. It's about a pound of frozen corn, about a 16-ounce bag. You want to take it off the cob. You're a finer person than I am. And it'll be about 3 cups worth. Of course, you can't use the cob weight, right, because it's garbage. But we're going to use corn kernels. Frozen is just fine. Don't tell anyone. But if you're going to use frozen, you need to defrost it to thaw it out and to pat it dry because we don't want excess dampness. Let's have 16 ounces of sour cream. Please do not use some sort of a strange substitute. You got to use the real stuff. Yeah. Don't use a light sour cream or some sort of a, I don't know, there's all kinds of product in the dairy counter around here that's not really sour cream. Use the sour cream. If you've got a whole bunch of water on the top, people are telling me it's whey, W-H-E-Y. You know what I mean, the liquid. Drain it, kind of just skim it off, yeah. 3/4 of a cup of cornmeal. Mm-hmm. 3 nice big eggs, which we're going to separate. Take the yolk and put it in a little dish and the white and put it in a different little dish. Yeah? Okay. So that's our ingredients. So we're going to take our cream corn and our kernels and our sour cream and our cornmeal and the egg yolks, and we're going to mix them all together. Mm-hmm. Really nice and incorporated. Yeah. So we've got most of the ingredients in there already, right? Now we're going to go get ourselves a mixer, an actual, either a hand one. Use a hand one. It's going to take you a little while. I've got an electric mixer. Most people do. On high speed and a little bit in the smaller bowl, because you don't want to spread out too much, you're going to beat those egg whites until they become stiff. That's why it's a souffle, right? Remember, we separated out. The yolks are already in with the corn and the sour cream and the cornmeal. So we're going to just take the egg yolks and we're going to whip them. We're going to beat them until they make peaks, right? Yeah, until they get stiff. Now, we've got the egg whites. They're all nice and fluffy and stiff, and they've made what they call peaks, which is the thickness off the whisks of the mixer. And you know how you get the egg whites. You kind of tap them, take the little whisk things off the mixer, and you tap it against the bowl so it's all in there. So we've got the egg whites. We're now going to fold the egg whites into the corn mixture. Just not too hard, if you know what I mean, because we want to keep this fluffy. And that's why we bothered to beat the egg whites. If we were going to make it all really seriously mixed together, we wouldn't have beaten them. We would have just thrown them in. So you're going to fold it in, which you do with a spatula, right? You take it out, then you just fold it. You kind of turn the whole thing, the whole mixture, until the fluffy egg whites are incorporated but not squished down, you know, so it's nice and fluffy. We're going to take this mixture, now that we've folded them in, and we're going to throw it into our baking dish, which we've greased. And we're going to bake this whole thing for about 45 minutes. The trick is that the edges, it turns like lightly brown, and the center is soft but not wet looking. Yes, you can put a toothpick. I'm chicken, and I usually put a bamboo skewer because it's a big, long toothpick, and I don't like burning my hand. So, but yeah, you can, until it comes out clean, but you can kind of look at the consistency of it too. The edges should be set real definitely, and the middle should not be wet. It should have a jello consistency, like a jiggly consistency. So, there you have it. That is a lovely corn souffle. Easy, yes, it is. This is a very good point. People are going, wow, that's really easy souffle. Yes, it is. Usually there's a whole bunch more mess to a souffle. But this is delicious. It is, yeah, it's kind of a side dish unless you're going really vegetarian. Not vegan because it's got dairy in it. Yeah, and it is easy to do. It looks fantabulous. You can cook it in the room if you've got the facilities. Bring it kind of, well, you probably shouldn't bring it half cooked, though. You can rewarm it in an oven a little bit. Don't let it dry out. I was going to say you could half cook it and then bring it, but really you shouldn't because it has eggs. And also, it's not going to set up nice. The souffles are kind of picky like that. So it should be cooked straight through, but it does indeed, if you can, it's in your room, in your facilities, it makes the place smell lovely. Mm-hmm. And it's just yummy. Mm-hmm. And remember to sit it on a rack. I kind of like a rack because it airs it out on the bottom. Yeah. For about 10 minutes, it won't set properly. And then you just cut it into pieces. Yummy. Mm-hmm. So that is our safe recipe. Why is it safe? Well, it doesn't have too many ingredients. It is ingredients that people are familiar with. And you've taken your survey, and people the participants are not allergic or have food prohibitions or religious prohibitions to it. Yeah, so that's that one. And yes, it is kind of a side dish, which is good. Good to have. You know, I like to have all kinds of things because people have all kinds of tastes, and it leads to more talking. The more things you've got to taste, the more we have to talk about, because the food is one of those things to talk about and to bond over that's non-controversial. I mean, how can food be controversial? It's delicious. It's lovely. It smells good. There's something. How do you make that? You see, it's all interesting. So let's go on to our adventure recipe. Now, what on earth is an adventure recipe? Well, it is something that is a little bit more unlikely that people will have be real familiar with it. Now, this is an adventure recipe in my area. It might not be an adventure recipe in your area, right? This might be something that everyone is familiar with. But in my particular area, a curry would be kind of adventurous. And I'm afraid that people email me on this all the time. I think that you should err to make mistake on the part of blandness and have condiments and spicy things to the side so that people can add them in. Mm-hmm. If you like it really, if you really want, well, jalapenos don't go with a curry, but you know what I mean, like a chutney or something. I don't add it in because I always figure, well, this is the basic, this is the base, and if you like it more so, put some in. It's to the side. It's also labeled there. I mean, if you want hot sauce in something, there it is on the counter. So I always think that whenever, even on a curry or something like that, I don't over-season things. And people are saying you put in a lot of garlic and stuff. Yeah, well, people say I do indeed. I guess that's the one thing I err on. I put in garlic. But I do think that it is better to be able to just add something, right? And not just go, well, let's make it really spicy and see how people feel about it. So I'm going to make a curry, but I'm going to make it not very spicy. Not very curried, I'm afraid. So I'm going to put in 2 tablespoons of curry powder. Is that a lot of curry powder? I don't think so. If you think that's kind of too much, you can put in less. Mm-hmm. Let's have 8 skinless, boneless chicken breasts. You can just buy them like that in my area. But if that is a hard thing to do or hard thing to find, just take apart a chicken. But you don't want bones and you don't want skin. And you can cut it into pieces. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say cut them into like chunks. In fact, 8 might not be enough. Well, not less than 8. Let's have a couple tablespoons of oil, maybe 3. A nice big onion that we're going to chop up. 1/4 inch of fresh ginger, if you can get it. Very nice. Ginger is lovely. You know, you have to skin it and you grate it. A little grater, a little hand grater. If you don't have one of those, you can just finely chop it. But it needs to be smallish because fresh ginger is quite pungent. Mm-hmm. Let's put in 3 cloves of garlic. I do like garlic in things. This is true. And I always think the garlic goes with the ginger. So let's put in 3 cloves. We're also going to finely chop that just as fine as we did the ginger. Mm-hmm. You know, lemongrass will be lovely in this. It's a little bit of an oddity around here, but if you can find it, like a stalk, maybe a little smaller than a stalk, of lemongrass that we're also going to finely chop. The herbs and stuff are going to be finely chopped, right? And that makes it lovely. People are asking if lemon zest can be substituted for lemongrass. I don't see why not. I suppose so. Yeah, why not? not too much because you'll overpower it. Lemon, we all know that lemon zest is actually the outside peel of a lemon that is very, very finely grated, like with a microplane, and makes a lemony flavor. Why not? It's a lot easier to find than lemongrass. I must confess that. We're going to have two tomatoes that we're going to take the seeds out of and chop. You know, this is one of those times when I will not use canned tomatoes. The reason being is they are too wet and too soft. You really do need to use tomatoes. If you can find such a thing, they look really nice, those plum tomatoes are a lovely thing, and you'll need more than two, of course. Make about four, maybe six, depending on the size. All right, more. You'll look at the size. Because they are firm, and they've got a lot of skin without being tough. Does that make sense? Yeah, those are kind of nice for this, but you need to take out the seeds. Take out the wet stuff. A stick of cinnamon, just to give it some taste. You know, five cloves, which is going to be also some extra taste. This is a very tasty curry. Kind of sweet in this way because it has the ginger and the cloves and the cinnamon. Mm-hmm. This is another thing that is unusual in this area. But it comes in a can. Isn't that awful? But it really does. A cup of coconut cream. It's a little can that you open up, and it'll make this just so delicious and give it a lovely taste to it with all the different spices and stuff. Yeah. And the curry and the ginger and the whole bit. And this is a very pungent dish. So it's wonderful to cook in the room if you have the facilities, because it makes everybody's mouth water. But you must label all these things. You see why this is an adventure recipe? It has a bunch of stuff that people in my area, maybe in your area, this is a safe recipe. Depends where you are. Coconut cream and lemongrass and things like that. And I'm going to put in a red pepper, which I'm going to chop up fairly fine, just because I think it looks pretty and gives an extra flavor with the tomatoes, right? You must, of course, devein it, right? Take out the veins on the inside and de-seed it very carefully. Those little seeds are nasty if they get into your dish. So now we've got it. And, of course, you pat the red pepper dry after you get rid of the seeds, right? Right, because you're going to probably rinse it under something. So what are we going to do now? We're going to toast the curry powder. Just because it's kind of dried, at least it is in my area, and you want it to smell nice. You kind of toast it until it starts to smell, until it starts to be fragrant, right? And now we're going to take our chicken chunks. Remember our 8 skinless, boneless chicken breasts that we cut into pieces? And we're going to rub them with the curry powder. Mm-hmm. And This is the part that's kind of, you have to think ahead of time. If you want the curry powder to really permeate the chicken, and you really kind of do, because otherwise they're going to be kind of bland, right? And you don't want the curry powder just in the sauce. You'd like the chicken to be permeated. You need to coat the chicken and then put it in a pan and cover it, like with, you know what saran wrap is, that plastic wrap? It's what I usually use, but you can cover it with if you've got a pan that's got a lid, like a plastic lid, yeah. And leave it in the refrigerator for about, well, you could leave it even overnight. I'm a little scared of chicken, so I don't like it to leave it too long. So I like to leave it for, what, about 3 hours, but in the refrigerator. Don't leave it on the counter. You will accidentally poison people. So you're going to cover it, and you're going to, like, marinate it, but it's a dry marinade. It's not. It doesn't have any wetness to it, right? We haven't put it in a bag or anything. But you're just going to let the curry powder sit onto the chicken is damp, right? You sit onto the damp chicken and kind of permeate it. It's going to be delicious. Just take my word for it. But you need to do it, like, in the morning for putting this together in the evening. Well, the afternoon to the evening. 3 hours minimum for chicken, yeah? 3 to 5, yeah. So it makes it really permeated. Okay. So we've got that going. We're going to take it out of the fridge now. And we're going to heat the oil in a nice big pan. And we're going to fry the onion until it gets kind of translucent. You know, what takes about 5 minutes less. And then we're going to add the red pepper. And we're going to cook that around in the oil until that gets nice and cooked. Doesn't take too long because it's chopped pretty finely. And then we're going to add the ginger and the garlic and our lemongrass. And we're going to stir fry that for about another minute so that it all gets incorporated and it all gets hot and it all smells yummy, let's face it. Now we're going to add the chicken and we're going to kind of seal the chicken all around, kind of push the pepper and the onion and stuff a little bit to the side. I like to cook the chicken on each side, just like a minute, and then turn it over in a minute. We're not really cooking it through, but I like to give it a little bit of a crust type thing to kind of seal it in. So now we've got the chicken in there, and we're going to add the tomatoes and the cinnamon and the cloves, right, to give it more deliciousness. And we're going to keep stirring this because otherwise stuff will start to stick, like the onions and the pieces of chicken. So we're going to turn the chicken as we go. The chicken is now cooked on all sides pretty much, right, because we've made chunks. And everything is stir-fried. It's all smelling delicious like that. Now's our time for the coconut cream. And it's been my experience that coconut cream, because it comes out of that little can, and of course you shook the can or whatever if it had separated, it's now kind of a little thick. I like to add a little bit of water. You got to look at it. If it looks really kind of thick and like condensed soup, oops, I said a bad word, didn't I? But you know what I mean. If it looks like it's not going to simmer, it's too thick, I like to add a little water, like a half cup even. But I don't like to say how much because you have to look at it, right? Now we've got the sauce going. And it's going to come to just almost a boil because you've put it in a hot pan. And you've added about half a cup of water. And it's got all the seasonings and like that, and it's just yummy. Let's reduce this, cover it, and we're going to simmer it for about 20 minutes. The sauce is going to reduce, right, because it's going to be, actually, I don't always cover it. Let's think about this. It doesn't really need to be covered. Let's simmer it, because we want to reduce the sauce so that it's not, it's really coating the chicken and everything and not too watery, not too loose. Mm-hmm. We're making almost like a stew, practically, in consistency. Takes about 20 minutes. You've got to give it an occasional stir or you're going to have stuff stuck to the bottom of your pan. Mm-hmm. Juice the heat, simmer the whole thing for about 20 minutes until your chicken is cooked through and tender and the sauce has been reduced, which is why we're going to add the little bit of water to it, right? And, yeah, that's a good point. People are saying you could add chicken stock instead of water. Why not? It would give it a little bit of extra flavor. Yeah, I don't see why not. I usually add water because it's got so many diverse flavors to it. Yeah. And besides, I can kind of, I don't throw in the whole half cup of water. I kind of look at it as it's simmering and go, oh, yeah, it's reducing, but it's a little bit too thick. And I throw in a little bit of, you know what I mean, as I go along and I stir it. So there you have it. It is our adventure recipe. It has some items that our people, at least my people, would not be particularly familiar with. Therefore, it's the adventure one and it needs to be carefully labeled as everything is. Yes. That's it. That's our adventure recipe. Delicious, fragrant, fun to make in as a participant idea, to have it done in the room. Mm-hmm. People tell me that it's not cooking together, that's watching somebody do it. But hey, it's participation. Yes. And by the way, thank you for all of your participation now that we're talking about participation. Thank you. We are nearly out of time. My goodness, that went fast. I hope you learned something. I always do. Thank you very much for being there. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. If you would like to contact us, we are at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Last five shows are archived on our website at recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.